ABC News, I'm Daria Albinger. Congressional leaders met at the White House today with President Biden days before a possible government shutdown.
It was frank and honest. I think we need more frank and honest conversations on Capitol Hill. So I was happy to participate in this.
House Speaker Mike Johnson says he's hopeful they can reach a deal. It's primary day in Michigan. Guilty verdicts for two men charged in the murder of Jason Mizell, better known as Jem, Master J, of Run DMC. U.S. Attorney Breon Peace thanking witnesses who came forward more than 20 years later to testify.
We cannot and should not accept the victimization and killing of members of our communities.
Mizell was fatally shot in a recording studio in 2002. A wildfire in the Texas Panhandle has shut down all roads out of the city of Canadian. The British Maritime Trade Organization says a rocket exploded in the side of a ship in the Red Sea. The crew is okay and the vessel is on its way to the next port of call. This is ABC News.
Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. A pair of redistricting experts is billing the state $128,000 for the work they did for the Wisconsin Supreme Court. About half of the bill will be paid by taxpayers. The rest will be covered by the six parties in the case, including three groups funded by private lawyers. The case was effectively closed when Governor Evers enacted new maps last week. Black History Month is winding down, and black leaders in Wisconsin say they're dismayed by the recent rhetoric over diversity, equity, and inclusion. State Representative Lakeisha Myers says civil rights protections are the law for good reason.
So people can get their work done and not be harassed, intimidated, actually have the ability to be hired in certain jobs.
Myers speaking to the Wisconsin Eye Public Affairs Channel. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WISS WGBW News, I'm Lisa Hale. The Green Bay School Board looks a little different after its only person of color resigned her position Saturday. Laura Leighton Warren said in a statement on her Facebook page that she wants to spend time and energy in areas where she can have a more impactful role in effecting positive change in the community. In the meantime, dozens of concerned citizens encouraged the Green Bay School Board to reinstate Claude Tiller Jr. as superintendent during an open forum last night. Matt Freilich says that he feels the board's commitment to diversity is negotiable.
It's not hard. It's really not hard. It's just a bunch of people that want to hear their voice heard and not have six people stand up here that look nothing like them.
Tiller resigned after being put on administrative leave while the board reviewed his appearance and comments on an Atlanta radio show. The school board did meet in closed session before the open forum to discuss hiring an interim superintendent. And that's what you need to know. I'm Lisa Hale, WISS WGBW News.
Mino and the Mayor.
Hey, if I could find my grandma's recipe for grappa, maybe we could do that.
A moonshine?
Grappa.
Oh, grappa's not moonshine?
We don't like that term.
Italians don't like the Kentucky or what?
And that's what it said on the arrest papers.
That's right.
You're one of the few guys I know that the grandma did time.
Weekday mornings from 6 until 8 on the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, and Oshkosh Air Support, WISS.
And on the Civic Media app.
Bucks return to Milwaukee. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. After the All-Star break and a road trip, the Bucks are back home tonight against the Charlotte Hornets. Head coach Doc Rivers says he's finally seeing improvement on defense.
I think our guys, you know, playing both ends is exhausting, and it was taken away from our offense a little bit. I think their conditioning is starting to catch up. You can see that, you know, last three, four games we've been terrific. This team, because you have a Giannis on your team, if you can get stopped, you can get in transition. Giannis in transition is a problem for everybody.
Baseball, the Brewers losing to the Reds 8-3. Tomorrow, they'll host Craig Counsell and the Chicago Cubs. We're in Indy to cover the NFL Scouting Combine getting underway today. Over 320 of the top players in college football are here. Will running back Aaron Jones be back with the pack?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we'd love to have Aaron back. We're still kind of putting all those things together as far as how we're going to move forward. But, I mean, that's kind of the anticipation is that he'll be back.
That's Packers GM Brian Gutekunst. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Some rain showers this evening, becoming all snow showers overnight, and windy, gusts 30 to 40 miles an hour. A low to the mid-teens, wind chills drop to near zero. Flurries and clouds linger tomorrow morning, then clearing and colder for the afternoon, high mid-20s. But up to 40 Thursday. Currently at 64 degrees.
After my wife died, I felt like I lost everything, including my love of fishing. But one day, my granddaughter called, and I realized I still had a lot to look forward to. I got referred to a psychiatrist who explained depression can happen to anyone. Getting help doesn't make me weak. It makes me stronger. I just wish it made me better at fishing.
Mental health care is working for Diego. See what it can do for you at mentalhealthcareworks.org. A message from the American Psychiatric Association Foundation.
Hey, it's producer Amanda. Michael Bailey and Kevin Van Es join the guys on Wednesday morning to talk about their show at the Meyer Theater. Mino and the Mayor, 6 to 8 on WISS and WGBW.
From I-43 to I-41, this is the Talk of Green Bay. 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW.
This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
Oh, welcome, Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. The number always 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. Yes, people listening last night, Johnny, my dad called me and says, is that you live or am I listening to a recording? I said, now, Dad, if I'm talking to you on the phone and you're listening to the radio, I don't think that that could be me live on the radio while you and I are talking on the telephone.
Yeah, man. I mean, you know, we had to rally last night and make some pivots. And, you know, luckily we have some good content to put up there and great producer Anya on the boards. So, you know, sorry if we weren't live for you last night, but we are tonight.
Yeah,
so
we are.
844-967-2789. Right. But Tim, how's it going, man? What's up?
It's going, you know, I'm talking about food today. I think it's a good topic, but, you know, the potential of saying, you know, so what happened last night, and I'll be honest here, and I think we need to talk about this a little bit occasionally, is that, you know, it was, some days, right? Some days the headspace, right? And we think about, you know, where we are and how we can adapt and how we make those things. It made me realize that, you know, when thinking about that, how are, you know, the headspace that we occupy when we come to a task, thinking about being in school, for example, right? The realities of what it's like. And to think about a child sitting out in front of you, I remember those days teaching where you forgot that they've got their own thoughts and the things that are going on in their mind and the lives that are happening and all of that happening. And so, you know, it's just a pause to sit down and go, occasionally check in with those students, make sure everybody's in the right headspace, and sometimes take a break when you're in that headspace where you might need a moment. Just reminding people, Johnny, and that's, you know, in anticipation of tomorrow night when we have our Educators Amplified guests coming in, always talking about trying to get us in a well-regulated state. So just a little quick aside there. How are you, my friend?
Man, I'm great. And in fact, just what you were talking about right now, Tim, about checking in with your students and understanding, if you're a teacher out there, I know you do this. And if you're not, it's always a good reminder, check in with your students. We were just talking about that today with the future teachers that I get to teach. You know, how do we, you know, check in and get a sense of what young people are experiencing and feeling in our learning spaces, and understanding the impact of current events on what students bring into the classroom, right? Because to be our best selves in terms of learners or even as teachers, we got to do those check-ins, and we got to also address, what do we need, right? What is it we need right now? And, you know, that's a nice segue into a little bit about what we're going to talk about tonight, Tim.
What do we need? Well, I want to set this up, though, too, because, you know, little tease here. So we're going to play a clip, Johnny, a clip from back in the day of Busted Pencils. We've been teasing this. One of the guests that will be coming on the show in March. Yes, is Matt Damon's mom. You guys have heard some of the promos. Stop bothering me and ask my mom. Dr. Nancy Carlson Page is going to be making a, you know, semi-regular appearance on Busted Pencils. And yes, it really is. Dr. Nancy Carlson Page is AKA Matt Damon's mom. Johnny, when I was just doing the Busted Pencils podcast, we used to have, you know, where I would have Matt's mom and just have her reflect. And during the DeVos years, there was a moment where the idea of a free lunch came up. And Nancy and I were talking about, so what would Matt Damon's mom say about free lunches? Anya, I know we have that queued up, though. So let's jump right in. And, you know, here's what Matt Damon's mom would say about free lunches.
Free lunch thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're rolling. Oh, Matt Damon's mom, Nancy, yes. My friend.
Yes.
Betsy DeVos, our new Secretary of Education, is quoted as saying there is no such thing as a free lunch. What the hell did she mean?
No, I think she was making some kind of off-the-cuff comment about something Bernie Sanders had done. But what it made me think about, of course, now she's head of the lunch program, right?
Right.
But what it made me think about is and feel about is that we have 31 million kids in the U.S. who qualify for free lunch. And that makes me think about the sad fact that that the majority of kids in our public schools now are low income, 51%. Mm-hmm. So let's just acknowledge that we have just extreme income inequality in our country. So the fact that we're even talking about a free lunch, what is a free lunch? Really? And just not as a joke, but it's because kids are hungry and because their families can't afford enough food to feed them adequately that they get a free lunch at school. And that's a pretty sad situation in a country this wealthy that we have that many kids who are poor.
Right. But how far off is it, though, when you think about what you just said? You know, okay, well, maybe she didn't actually mean anything about the free lunch program or the free and reduced lunch program we have in this country for hungry children. However, I'm not sure about that because was it a week or two later, the budget director for the Trump administration actually came out and said, you know, I'm paraphrasing his quote, but, you know, look, we have no tangible evidence that feeding children helps their achievement.
Yeah.
I mean,
no, the Republicans are trying to cut back the free lunch program.
Yeah. And you're sitting there going, okay, first of all, I don't really give a poop if it has anything to do with achievement. How about the fact, as one person said, it makes a hungry kid unhungry?
Or, right.
You know, and so if you're not hungry, and that's a good thing. So if we're giving free lunches to hungry people and it stops them from being hungry, maybe that in and of itself is an okay result.
At the very surface of it, just feeding kids in school is a great idea. Kids need to eat pretty often, which most parents know. And, you know, having a good, delicious, healthy meal in the middle of the day for kids is a great thing for schools to do, regardless of their income level. Just a healthy thing to be eating well and have a couple snacks, too, during the day. I mean, they're there for a long time, and some they need to eat. But also, some of them, it's the only meal they get.
I used to keep Tic Tacs in the drawer and give them Tic Tacs for breakfast. No.
Just kind of hold that maybe right there. So, Johnny, there is Dr. Nancy Carlson Page, Matt Damon's mom, talking about the free lunch program and the fact that, you know, back 4 years ago, people were talking about cutting it pre the pandemic. The pandemic came in. We created a free lunch program. And now the pandemic's over. The pandemic funding is gone. And what are we doing with free lunches and all of that? But, you know, right away, the caller Cindy from Appleton right away, though. Cindy, what's happening in your world?
Well, I have two questions. First of all, how in God's name did Betsy DeVos become in charge of the food program under the Biden administration? And number two, when are people going to really get up in arms about all the corporate welfare we give away, but we can't feed our children?
You know what, Cindy? So first, just make correction on that. That Betsy DeVos isn't in with the Biden. That was an old cut from the podcast back during the Biden years when I used to have Matt Damon's mom come on. So
do you
just
mean
clarifying
back
that.
Years?
Back during the Trump years,
let's
right?
Let's get names
during...
straight quick.
Okay.
That's big difference there.
Yeah. So Betsy DeVos was not in charge during the Biden time and during this time, but with Trump. But the excess wealth. I mean, Johnny, what do you say to Cindy?
Well, I mean, Cindy brings up a great point, whether it's, you know, and really the Biden administration hasn't been great at this either. So let's give, you know, credit given where credit due. By and large, Cindy's point is a huge one I want to amplify. Come on, priorities. What are we thinking? We give out, like Cindy brought up, so much corporate welfare, so many benefits, the basic needs to corporations or to interest groups. Why wouldn't we, at the very fundamental level, make sure children are fed, right? The numbers we're getting back under both kinds of administrations, unfortunately, you know, we're in a two-party system, so I can only say both, but under two different political groups' leadership, children have suffered. And this is a basic thing. And so I like that Cindy brought that up. Like, come on, really? When we're talking about brass tacks at the ground level, a healthy community, a healthy democracy, and what do we need in schools? Well, at the very least, kids who might not, that's a bigger issue we can get to in a country as wealthy as ours. Unfed children is really gross. But might schools as public institutions be places where at a minimum children who are experiencing poverty and who are living under malnourishment, schools could provide something, and many schools do. I actually hate that we call it free lunch. It should just be lunch.
Thank you.
Or nourishment or supplement, you know, something. Yeah. It's just like, hey, if kids need food, they should
food.
Have that.
Yeah.
And international. Yeah. I'll add on to that before we go to our break. You know, internationally, when I get to work with teachers in other parts of the world, they're often just flabbergasted, shocked. We haven't figured this out. And not only, we'll get into a layer, not only food, but quality food, because what typically constitutes lunch for all is not really healthy food, and it's not brain food, and it's not good growing food. And pediatricians will put their rubber stamp on that. You know, we need to be doing better for our children. And that's really for our community in general. Nobody should go without food. Right. We can get into those bigger politics, but if we just narrow in, come on, public schools, schools in general, places where young people are coming to learn. You can't learn if you're malnourished. You can't grow, you can't develop. And those correlations are irrefutable. And so we'll get into that when we come back. You take us to break, Tim, but when we get back.
No, I'm just telling you, right? Think about that, Johnny. Oh, hey, just remind everybody too, 844-967-2789. Cindy, thanks for the call from Appleton. But yeah, the free lunch. Now, going back to that, the premise, I want to go on this. There was a premise back in the day that, you know, well, free lunches don't add, and free lunches is a horrible way, do not add to the, you know, the academic achievement of learners. And it was just like that whole idea of, Johnny, you putting in this in the context of international friends who might look at this and say the whole food thing. The fact that we were even saying, well, look, if we feed kids, it doesn't make them do better on tests. Wait, hold on. What about universally free food? Busted Pencils when we get back.
Your eyes are open, but you can't see.
This is the talk of Green Bay, WGBW.
Hey, Wayne, shopping for a new door? Do you need something more dependable?
Yes, something that's durable, dent-resistant, knows how to take a hit, and is going to last for years.
We're still talking about the door, right?
Oh, yeah, right. Of course.
Wayne Larrabee and Jeff Levering shopping together at Pella? What next? How about 0% interest for up to 3 years? Or no money down, no interest, and no payments for up to 18 months at Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin. Visit PellaWI.com.
Certain restrictions apply. See showroom for details.
Do you ever get tired of one-sided conversations filled with mean-spirited rhetoric? It's time to listen and engage. Join the Rational Revolution with me, Chris Alfine, Saturday afternoons at 2 and Sunday afternoons at 1 on the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, and the Civic Media app.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home for the Devil's Advocates radio show.
We want to talk about it. It's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. The number 844-967-2789. Whoever said there's no such thing as a free lunch? Well, I don't know. As Johnny points out, the whole word free is as if, you know, there's something there. Food and the essentialism of food. Think about this, right? Life on this planet requires food. Okay. Mm-hmm. Learning, being in a school and being able to learn, the having that you have had food is kind of one of those base requirements. Some schools and some places are starting to say, Johnny, you know what? We don't care. Forget about free lunches. Forget about reduced price lunches. We just offer food, universal food access for anybody who comes to school. No income requirements. Doesn't matter. Food is available. What do you think about that, Johnny Lupinacci?
I mean, I love it because, I mean, there is no such thing as a free meal. It costs somebody something somewhere. It's just a matter of prioritizing, especially we can put all the bigger politics we have around food in a democracy aside and say young people are developing, they're growing, they're learning. And in order to do that, unfortunately, we can't photosynthesize as human beings. So, you know, we're not like our plant life friends. So we need to be able to have sustenance to do those things. An investment, it costs money, but an investment in feeding, literally feeding young people in our community is a high return. There's a high yield, and there's a high return. And research, like real research, not only in the actual medical side of this, but that's always been there. Like you need healthy, nourishing food in order to grow and to learn and to develop. But we also have, it's correlated, having a strong correlation. These what we're calling universal food for children in schools is correlated with, there we go there. I mean, we've been critical of it all week and last week.
I know.
Week.
That's all right.
Correlated with high achievement. Wow. Who would have thought?
Who knew?
Fed, they're going to do really well on their learning and their tasks. I mean, this is Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Right. This is like we talk about in order to survive, you brought it up, Tim, you need food in order to exist, right? Yeah. But to thrive, which we want our children to do in schools, right? They have to be well fed. And that's just not putting something in front of them to fill their bellies. That's actually putting good, nourishing, healthy food accessible to young people so that they can grow and develop. I mean, it's game changer. It has societal impacts.
What brought this up was, so back to, you know, one of the places where Busted Pencils like to grab its education news, K-12 Dive right there was, there's an article that talks about that during the pandemic, when there was a universality of food availability without cost to the students, then guess what happened during that time? More hungry students ate well, and more students who ate did better in the achievement. And so now, though, guess what? As we're coming up on that pandemic funding that's running out, because as you pointed out, Johnny, it's got to be funded. It's not a free lunch. That more students are now not eating at school And now the result is that students aren't doing as well at school. And so the solution, how do we pay for the free lunch? I'm not sure, but I'm always happy to hear when caller Joanne gives us a call and says she's got something to say. Joanne, how are you?
Oh, really great. This is a wonderful issue. In Maine, there was a school district that actually put up the names of young people who didn't have their balances cleared in terms of the payments they were making for school lunches. They were shaming the individuals who didn't have their parents give them the money to make up those balances, which was absolutely amazing. We spend so much money when we force people to pay a little bit for school lunches. We force them to, remember things and go through those horrible instances at home where the mother or the father or the caretaker doesn't have the coins to give to the young child. But even more horribly, we add an accounting cost to the whole thing. The accounting that's involved in marking in who's paid up and who isn't, or who's qualified for the lunch or who isn't, all of that is people power that has no, it's just a dead cost. It just has nothing to do with teaching people and healing people and making the society better. It's just it's just bean counting, okay, to use that derogatory term.
Joanne. Okay, keep going, Joanne.
Yeah, well, there are so many ways that we can streamline this process just by doing what you're talking about, making the food free. We can do all sorts of interesting things with contracting with local providers and make the community better. That's the interesting thing, mm-hmm. because we can use the school as a fulcrum for community advocacy and development by using local providers when possible, and also educationally. Tell people what some of these specialty foods that they may have never tried before are all about. I had a teacher in my, I was brought up in the inner city of Chicago, and I had a teacher who brought in honey from real honeycomb, so people could figure out what we could as students could figure out what honey was. We didn't know. She taught us. So again, I'll never forget that, and I know that many other teachers are doing that out of their own pockets. But instead of doing that type of time wasting, we should be doing that at a larger level and allowing schools to fulfill those functions that schools can so wonderfully fulfill in the community.
Thank you, Joanne. Absolutely. You made me think though too, and Johnny, I did this. You know, when I was a fifth grade teacher. The fifth grade team, we had in our desks excess spare food snacks, mm-hmm. because we knew that there were kids who came in hungry, and to start the day, it would just be like, here's the snack, man, check it out. And the ability to think about that, and Joanne, yeah, is it free? Who pays for it? But the reality is, I was thinking about the who pays when the food requirements or needs, that basic human need, isn't met, we all suffer. And so you're sitting there going, it's like, this is a way to bring some type of, sense of the world that just says, wait a minute, we're going to do what's right here. Again, it's great that it raises test scores. It's great that, but the reality is that it's food universally. So back to the point, as we're coming out, the pandemic era money is running out, and schools now are going back to the debts. And what caller Joanne was talking about, the reality of saying those debts, yeah, guess what? And schools are really concerned right now, Johnny, that they're going to go back to the days where they're going to have to record those debts. And how do they make up for it? Horrible example of what happened there, where she said in Maine, there were all lots of places they would shame lunch, shame students into going, you have a bill left to be paid. We do not want to go back to that era ever again. It's, it's busted pencils. It's 844. It's 967-2789. If you want a free lunch, call us when you get back.
Hey, everybody. It's Todd Allball. Wednesday noon till 2 with the return of Pat Kreitlow. Trigby Olson will review the Michigan primary and more on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Much of southern Wisconsin is going on a wild weather ride today, starting with possible record high temperatures, then snow, strong storms, and bitter cold. Today starts as mild as yesterday. High temperatures should reach the 60s and even the low 70s. Things take a turn starting at about 6 o'clock tonight with a chance of severe weather. 413 high school students will get hands-on training in four new possible career paths this year. Business administration and education were added to the Wisconsin Youth Apprenticeship Program last fall. Students take 1 or 2 years to take classes about their chosen field while getting experience outside the classroom. More than 8,000 students signed up for apprenticeships in Wisconsin last school year. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now, here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WISS WGBW News, I'm Lisa Hale. The search for a missing toddler in Manitowoc County is entering week two. Two Rivers Police Department, along with state and federal agencies, are searching waterways and landfills. Officials say they'll continue to follow up on tips and leads 24 hours a day in the search for the 3-year-old Elijah Vu. Officials also warn about third-party scams and people seeking money or personal information from the people who are touched by the tragedy. Elijah was reported missing on February 20th. Katrina Bauer, who is the mother of 3-year-old Elijah, was formally charged with child neglect and 2 charges of obstruction Monday in Manitowoc County Court. Jesse Vang, who prosecutors said had the boy for, quote, disciplinary reasons, has also been formally charged with child neglect. Preliminary hearings for both have been set for March 7th. And that's what you need to know. I'm Lisa Hale, WISS WGBW News.
You know, I hope this is the best hour of your life. I'll tell you that. The Cripes Cast, folks.
Comedian Mary Mack.
He's noticed a very sizable increase on people off the lake coming onto our lake to fish it. You don't want everything to be popular and known about. That seems to be the way I also approach my comedy, Charlie. I think there's a theme.
Cripes Cast every Saturday and Sunday at noon across Civic Media and on the Civic Media app.
I'm Pete with a 60-second showbiz beat. Bob Marley, One Love, dominated the box office for a second weekend in a row. The film pulled in $14 million over the weekend and totals $71 million overall. Reviews were lukewarm, but that's not stopping people from checking out the legendary reggae singer. Meanwhile, Ethan Coen's effort without his brother Joel, Driveaway Dolls, finished in a disappointing 8th place behind Wonka, a film that has been in theaters for almost 3 months. And in Now You've Ruined It news, Gwen Stefani says she can no longer listen to No Doubt songs and that doing so makes her want to throw up in her mouth. She is now married to country singer Blake Shelton, but says the old songs remind her of past relationships, which include a former bandmate and Gavin Rossdale from Bush, with whom she has 3 children. Shelton must be flattered he doesn't make his wife hurl in her own mouth yet. Don't worry, folks. Stefani says she still absolutely loves performing the songs live. Cha-ching. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, every night between 7 and 9 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Some rain showers this evening, becoming all snow showers overnight, and windy, gusts 30 to 40 miles an hour. A low to the mid-teens, wind chills drop to near zero. Flurries and clouds linger tomorrow morning, then clearing and colder for the afternoon, high mid-20s. But up to 40 Thursday. Currently at 62 degrees.
Matt Nair on air.
Hovde, Eric Hovde now. He will be running against Tammy Baldwin.
He's not a Wisconsinite. He threw his hat in the ring from California. This is Tim Michaels all over again. Businessman who walks in and goes, well, I can take care of this. And Wisconsin says, no. Good to know you. Here's some Kringle. Go back home.
Is that how we politely blow people off now? Is to take a Kringle and go away.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. From the home of the frozen tundra, Green Bay's choice for news talk, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW.
My
Busted Pencils Fully Leaded Education Talk, 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. Give us a call if you want to be one of the educated educators talking education. Man, we were talking about food, Johnny, you know, and the reality of the ability to either have food accessible in schools, you know, whether it's a free lunch, universal, and all of the implications there. And boy, you know, and producer Anya right now, we could talk about bullying and being hungry. Anya, sounds like you got a take there that you'd like. Tell, what are you thinking?
Well, I want to correct. I didn't say if they were hungry, if they were hangry. The
look at that.
Of being both hungry and that hunger, therefore making you angry. During the break, you had a little comment that just caught my ear. That's why I said it. Which is that we could talk about how schools that, you know, have free lunch for everybody, kids eat, you see less bullying, less violence. And to say bullying, I want to specify too, even just like kids who they don't have a relationship where they're bullying each other already, but picking fights, like just a random, what do you mean my shirt's ugly? I'm going to hit you.
Yeah.
Those are the kinds of things I think kids who are like hungry tend to do. You know, that's that was my thought.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's the hangry Johnny.
Anya's right. I mean, I don't do this often, and I have lots of stuff out there, but there's a reason, you know, Dr. Tim and I are here on this show and other things. And, you know, I have a book out there from a few years back called Poisoning and Imprisoning Our Youth. And it looks at food studies in schools that specifically links suspensions and violent behavior to lack of access to nourishing food. That includes, when we talk about that, includes not only like food or lunch, but it also looks at schools with high sugar intakes and sugar drops and the time correlations to often when suspensions and violent behavior in schools occurring. And it's in strong numbers in favor of the afternoons and late afternoons and usually pretty quickly after sugar drops. And so schools that eliminated the intake of excess amount of sugar and provided, you know, a healthy, nourishing lunch. I'm not talking about making every kid eat salad, right? But a lot of our foods that we think are nourishing are just sugars. And they're like, even this whole like, I can get way into it because the book does, but even the whole, like, industry and connection with milk and kids, you know, choosing, like, strawberry milk and chocolate milk and these things, the amounts of sugars and then the sugar crash and then directly connected to that, behaviors. And so Anya brought it up. It's absolutely, we don't need a researcher like me to point this out. It should be rather obvious, right?
But I call thank goodness you did, Johnny Lupinacci. What's that book title again?
Poisoning and Imprisoning Our Youth. But the idea is looking at the same fact is that the practices we do in schools, right, is setting kids up to fail, not only later on in life, but pretty early on. And this is not to say it's ever okay to be a bully or to be, you know, wrapped up in violent behaviors, but you're more likely to not respond with the tools oftentimes teachers and schools are trying to equip students with when you're malnourished, when you're to put simply, when you're hangry. That's a great term that's in everyday use. You use it in a joking way, but it's real. Oh, your patience are thin. You know, you like stuff that you might be able to rationally think through. I mean, tomorrow we'll have Educators Amplified on, and we're always talking with one another about, you know, being regulated, right? As a learner, but also as a teacher. And when you're not, when you're malnourished, right, you're more likely to react in, we can use the term hangry, to react in a hangry way. And that isn't always the best foot forward, okay? And so, you know, that's an important component to roll into this as well. It's also a little bit more political and stronger argument for this universal meal stuff that we're talking about tonight, Tim, but it's an argument in favor of it, right? Sure, like, how do we spend so much time deciding who deserves? This is the audacity of this argument. Who deserves nourishing food? Let's just get it for everybody.
Right.
If you need it, it's there. If you don't, okay, it's still there, right? And it's not going to waste, right? We can always say like really families and places where this is rolled out, families adjust. It's sure far less expensive to fund a universal meal plan in schools that's healthy and nourishing than it is to do the kind of disciplining that is a result of malnourishment. And that, I mean, I don't often take this argument because I always am pretty altruistic. I'm like, come on, this is the baseline. We want kids to have healthy food. Great, let's feed all the children. But if I was to take the argument, it's less expensive for the school district, like to have an organization provide a healthy, nourishing lunch than it is to deal with the kinds of disciplinary stuff that is a result of malnourishment, both in the immediate, both in the disciplinary costs in our schools now, and then compounding that effect later in life. So when we do ask, when we do say, like, where does universal meal money come from? I'll tell you what, we're going to incarcerate a whole lot less people. That means a lot less of our state funds going to keeping people incarcerated, especially keeping youth, right, punished and incarcerated. A fraction of the money we spend on that can be allocated into universal health plans, meals for children, and prevent that cost in the future and in the present, as well as our caller brought this up, caller Joanne, as well as be actively a stimulus in our local food economy.
This is huge, Johnny.
Food security in our communities is more than just an education issue, right? It is and there's a stigma around this term, Tim, so I'm going off on this for a minute.
I know, man. I'm letting you go for it, brother.
There's a stigma around the term welfare in our country and in our culture. And that's one thing. I don't know what else to call it because it's actually a pretty good term that was really, really became a pejorative. Became pejorative, Tim, because it became seen as individuals failing. If you need welfare, then you're an individual failing. Instead of understood as it is worldwide as a baseline that everybody has, right? So, I mean, it's I cringe at needing to use that word, but it's, you know, as till we shift our understanding of a basic welfare, right? At least agree on like meals for children. It helps us all. Even the local economy. So even if my politics, if you're out there listening, you're like, man, I don't agree with Johnny. I think, you know, it's a parent's responsibility. And if they can't provide lunch, that's a failure on their end. Well, what the numbers show us, it's increasingly likely for a majority of students in most districts, right? And so if we raise that bar of what we provide for children, it's less expensive than the cost that they won't have healthy food. Bottom line, in the end, it's spending less to get more. And so if we're against this, essentially we're pro not only children suffering, but having people with a worse education in our community.
And spending more later, as you point out.
I hate that argument because I'm always like, come on. Feed the children, no matter what it costs. But it does cost something. And what economists have figured out around the world is it costs a whole lot less. This is not a Republican or a Democrat issue.
Right.
This is just a basic fundamental, like human right and knowledge of basic economics. We invest less now to spend less, or we invest some now to spend less later.
Right. End of story. And there it is. It's right there. You have it. Number 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. Busted pencils. Educated educators talking education. We're talking school lunches. Yeah, you know, the whole idea of school lunch. And Anya, you know, the idea of hangry and bullying. And it made me think back to caller Joanne, though, too, about when there are debts, though, too, and when kids owe money and the way schools had sometimes gone out that. And I'm for anybody else out there, if you remember these, you know, if you when you went to school, and I'll say when I went to school, when you would come in and the free and reduced lunch line was at least when my school, when you came in, if you qualified for a free and reduced lunch line for a free or reduced lunch, you had to sign up in the morning in a line in front of all of your friends, and you'd go into that line. I remember that line, Johnny. You know why I remember that line? Because I remember that line 1 year walking past it, and I remember the following year I was in it. And there was something about being in the free and reduced lunch line that was something to hold on to, where you sit there and the potential of a, you know, and you say, why should I have had some sense of, quote, shame to get food at that moment in time when we needed it? You know, late 70s, early 80s, growing up in the steel town of Pittsburgh, guess what? 80% of my friends during that time, our fathers or the people in our lives, lost their jobs. It just happened. And that was a reality. And you think about it then, why couldn't I have just gone to school and just ate, and I didn't have to wait in that line? The whole idea that I used to look at that line before that happened, and you'd almost kind of be like, oh, look at those kids in the free and reduced lunch line. And then the 1 year to find yourself in it again is to, holy crap, go, wait a minute, this ain't right. And so I'm just thinking about that. There's so many different intersections here of how investing in food, and Johnny, you say a human right. A human right. You know, I always make this kind of like, look, being born a human, the base requirement of being, of staying alive is that there are some, you know, food is that part. And the whole idea that we as a society still continue to think that there is some type of, you have to earn your lunch, as opposed to thinking like, no, by being alive, we should all celebrate the food that we have.
Yeah, Tim. And I'm even all for earning your lunch. Like, hey, we're going to work hard in school this morning together. We're going to do our job. But if you're a kid, your job is to play and to learn and to, you know, not infringe on that for others. And so the kids are coming to school, they're doing their part. And you get like, now we're going to take a break and we're going to have this wonderful lunch that, you know, everyone's having. And there's all kinds of ways to do this in a way that's just, it's culturally appropriate. We know the foods of the communities that our schools serve. And so it's a stimulus to the local economy. It's a no-brainer. It's something that for some reasons we can get into, we've moved away from, and in many ways never really had here. Because even if I agree with you, it's a human right. But even if we break down into, I can get into maybe a debate or an argument about adults. I know where I stand on it. I think no matter who you are in our country, you should have access to food, right? But maybe I'm with my neighbor and my neighbor says, no way. You know, if you choose not to be going to work and not getting a job, yada, yada, yada. I'll listen to that argument. I'll say, but let's agree on children, right? Mm-hmm. Children are doing their job. They're showing up. They're being learners, they're playing, they're being kind to one another, and let's keep that going. Let's roll with that, because they're going to be more likely to be productive member of our community if they're nourished, right? And they're well fed. It's a basic children's right. If we don't agree on human rights, we want to get in the nitty gritty of what adults earn and don't get access to. I'll have that debate. Let's just agree that the children are fed. And in fact, if that's the case, what I know is to be true based on all the data done around the world, if we invest in kids, we have less to worry about for our adults.
I love the way you said that though, too. It's like, you know, wait, okay. So the kids are doing their job. They're going to school. They're playing. I mean, the job of a child then is to recognize, you know, it's, I get up, I go to school, I play out back. That's their job. And so to make sure that they do that job well, even, quote, playing on the playground, doing that, the idea is then, too, that there's a nourishment there. There's food.
So school is compulsory.
Yeah.
So it's not also like kids are choosing to be at school. And I agree with this, we're requiring them to be there. The very least we could do is accompany and complement their learning with the tools they need to learn. And in every way, just as maybe more important, arguably, as the books and the materials, the technology we want kids to have access to, even more important is the nourishment that makes that stuff applicable and usable.
844-967-2789. Universal free lunch. That's what we're all about. Call us when we get back.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home of Mino and the Mayor.
You need skill and a little luck to play the game of pool, and you could say one cue-making company in Wisconsin has both. Schmelke Cues in Rice Lake is the oldest pool cue-maker in the U.S. and remains a family-owned, third-generation operated business. Schmelke started as a one-man shop in the 1940s. Now more than 20 employees work at the facility. So do you know which state has the most cue-making manufacturers? Is it Maryland, Minnesota, Wisconsin? The answer coming up. Pool is an old game, and the cues similar to the ones used to play today were created in the late 1600s in Northern Europe. Pool came to America in the 19th century. So did you guess which state currently has four of the top five cue manufacturers? It is Wisconsin. And Schmelke Cues in Rice Lake has also been inducted into the International Cue Makers Hall of Fame, making this a worldwide slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Talk of Green Bay, WGBW.
Okay, Waukesha's home for Matt Nair on air. Okay.
Busted pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education, talking universal food availability for all students, regardless of income. Income doesn't matter. They're doing their job by being in school. Let's make sure that they have food. Jack from Merrimack is on the line. Jack, what's happening?
Thank you. Thanks for taking the call. I just have a short comment. Anyone that's against feeding students smacks to me very much of the type of person that is against forgiveness of student loans, of those people who perhaps started out in poverty and had to take out tens of thousands of dollars in loans because we aren't supporting our public universities anymore, just to get to a position where they can improve their lot in life and perhaps not live in poverty anymore. In my opinion, these people, anybody that's against that, are they're the jealous type that says, well, I got mine, so you're going to have to work for yours. And what they totally deny is the fact that some people are born into a situation where they cannot afford. They cannot afford college, or they cannot afford even appropriate food when they are going to lower schools. Such people not only lack what is often referred to as a Christian generosity approach to life, they have no empathy whatsoever, in my opinion.
Jack, Johnny Lupinacci, I'm seeing there. You know, so anybody, you got a comment there?
Well, I mean, I love Jack's call. Jack, thanks for calling and connecting the dots on that. That's exactly the logic, right? We have this understanding culturally. I say we because I'm part of this culture, you know, and we grow up in the environment of pick yourself up by your bootstraps, of, you know, work really hard. You too can work really hard, and you need to do it for the future. You need to do it for, you know, be able, if you have dependents, to be able to provide for your dependents and everything. And to some degree, that logic is admirable. It's important. Like, we want people to work hard, but we also know that it just doesn't work that way, that not everybody has bootstraps to begin with. And also that not everybody is equally rewarded just for hard work. Right. And increasingly the stigma is that it's quote unquote poor, not that it should matter at all, but quote unquote, that it's poor families that can't provide for lunch. But increasingly the amount of children who go malnourished disguise as middle class or middle upper class children as well. So this is kind of really important, that the logic that Jack shares here is really important. It's akin, you know, it's smack similar to the whole argument that, like, well, I worked for mine, so all these other people should suffer, right? Like the student loan forgiveness argument. And again, it comes back to the stigma around welfare. The same countries that provide universal meals also provide higher education to all their citizens, because it's well known that if you educate and you help make it really hard to not be healthy, you're a lot less expensive, and a lot of the goals we have as a democracy are more achievable, right? And so it comes up. Tim, before we run out of time, I want to get to it. I'm going to let you, chime in here, because I'm really taking up a lot of space, because, I don't know if you knew, you struck a chord really close to my interest as a teacher. I was like you, man. I had the snacks. I'd eventually had a school garden. We regularly had food in our classroom, and it just was so unifying, even for our curriculum. Like, the examples and the kind of work we did was around food, because why? Everybody eats. We don't just need to eat. We have traditions and rich, diverse culture around it, and there's always going to be a food economy. So we're actually really engaging people in skills that contribute directly into the economy. But I'm going to put this out there, because some of it, we're talking big picture, and a lot of this feels like, oh man, what can I do? And we started off with a great example from caller Joanne, who talked about, kids who have outstanding debt at school. Some of them can't even, they're not allowed into the reduced lunch line, right? And they're stigmatized, and there's this. I recently was made aware, here's something we could all do. Someone bought my coffee for me a month or so ago in Starbucks, and they said, and the barista said, yeah, this happens quite a bit. There's a whole thing where you buy coffee for the person behind you or for the person in front of you, pay it forward, good deed. I thought, wow, that was really cool. But you know what? I'm in line at Starbucks, right? And this isn't I probably shouldn't say it. I got money for coffee.
Yeah, you do.
Right? If you want to pay it forward, and I start doing this because for a few weeks I started thinking, this is great. Someone did this for me. I'm going to do this. And I participated in the pay it forward coffee line. And it doesn't have to be Starbucks. It could be your drive through or wherever. But likely if you're in line, you got the money. You know what you're in line for. Take that same $5 or whatever you were going to pay forward. And I love that idea, pay forward. And then contact your local school district and say, here's $5 I'd like to put towards somebody's lunch debt. If we all do that a little bit more, that debt drops. And you can say you wanted that good feeling of you did something for a fellow citizen. How about just a kid out there whose lunch debt's outstanding, and $5 is 2 weeks of lunch for that kid, if we just pay that down a little bit. So there's something we could do right away. I love practical. If you're thinking, what could I do? This is a lot of policy stuff. This is above my ability. Well, one, we could vote differently. Two, that's our civic responsibility. But two, if we're even in that thought process of, hey, I want to pay it forward for somebody and I can, call up your local school district and say, hey, how can I put $15 towards, some outstanding school debt? Let's pay it down. If we all did that a little bit, right? It's not the solution, because we don't want to individualize this to say everybody out there fix this problem. But in the meantime, man, the difference you make in a kid's life.
Sure. Think about that. Man, Lupinacci going from Starbucks to paying it forward there and moving that into the lunch line of your local school. Universal free lunch. Yes. Busted pencils. We're for it. We
can promise you it's a direct investment in keeping a kid out of incarceration, keeping them learning, and it's an investment back in your community. So it's the best $5 you can spend.
Take that $5. Busted pencils.
Hey,
holy leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. Tomorrow night, Educators Amplified. Back in the house. Check you out tomorrow.
Let's go.
Mino and the Mayor in the morning, and the talk of Green Bay all day long. 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW. The Todd Alma Show.
Green Bay is a fine town, but I'm just telling you, you're better off to take a horse. Don't drive in Green Bay, and for God's sake, don't get a parking ticket. So how about this? We find out how much revenue does Green Bay get from parking tickets, and we say that the Packers are going to donate that, and we're going to have free parking in Green Bay. How about that? Todd for mayor of Green Bay.
The Todd Alma Show, weekdays noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay. WGBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is a special report from ABC News Texas Wildfires. I'm Daria Albinger. Shelter in place.